Welcome to the interview on the Raptors Republic podcast network. I'm Andrew Damlin. I'm a writer for Raptors Republic. I cover the 905. So if you hear this voice for this podcast, you're probably going to be listening to content about the development of the Raptors and the Raptors 905 players. And a guest that I think is perfect for us has joined us today. The first time I met this guy, I remember I was in a scrum with then 905 head coach Jamma Malalela. And this person walked in the room and Jamma stopped what he did. And he said, "Look, there's Canadian basketball royalty over there." And I turned my head. I'm like, okay, so let's see who this is. And his name is Javon Shepherd, an 11-year pro internationally. He played with the Canadian national team for over a decade as well. Proudly spent 4 years at West Hill, dominating the high school scene in Toronto. Went off to Michigan to play for Tommy Amaker and John Beilein, who he has a huge admiration for. And he played against Blake Griffin in the NCAA tournament. He famously likes to brag that he dunked on Greg Oden. A Big Ten rival of his. Spent time overseas, came back, and now he's still in the game. He's cutting his teeth in broadcasting for the 905, for the Saga 960, and he's done work as an analyst for CBC Sports, and he is a proud father of a baby boy. Javon, how are you?
I'm good. You know, thanks for that intro. You know, if somebody's listening, they actually might believe you, and I sound better than... But no, it's funny, you know, you touched on that scrum with Coach Jamma. And to this day, I'm slightly embarrassed at that moment because I remember I had no idea what a scrum was. And, you know, I came in as a player and I literally walked in. I was like, oh, there's Jamma, my guy. I came in and I, you know, high-fived him and embraced him. Then I realized, like, wait, there's cameras and microphones in his face. And then everybody kind of chuckled. And I think Akil had said, so are you just going to end the pregame scrum? Or, no, we kind of chuckled. But it's funny, you know, I laugh at it now. And I meant to text him about it the other day because now I'm on that other side. Like, I'm, you know, in broadcasting. And it's like, okay, that was a very valuable moment that we interjected on. So, good times, though. Good times.
Yeah, and another new thing that you're going to be dealing with is you're the general manager of a basketball team in the CEBL with the Ottawa Blackjacks. Congrats on that position. And so these are all new things for you, new learning experiences. And I know you haven't, you know, recruited talent yet, but you know, now you're on the side where you're a talent evaluator. You're someone who has to really like go with your instincts and. You can talk about it on a broadcast as much as you want, but those decisions don't have to be tested. And I was wondering how, you know, so far, I mean, I'm sure you've done some workouts and things. How have you found that talent evaluation side of your personality so far? How have you found it?
I love it because I've always loved it as a player. I knew that, you know, coaching wasn't necessarily for me as a player, or at least in the immediate future, because I was fresh off of the court. I still want to give my body time to heal and decompress a bit and just, you know, have some time to spend with family and friends. But, you know, even in the latter part of my career, I was really focused on, you know, a big part of why I was even able to extend my career to, you know, over a decade was because, and probably a little more if I really wanted to push it, was because I honed in on, you know, the other side of the game that's, you know, the evaluation and the analytics as well as tactics and just really understanding player strengths, weaknesses and teams' strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, it's been an easy transition from both sides in terms of the broadcasting and being an analyst as well as general manager to this team because I'm essentially doing, you know, what I love and just evaluating and just watching games, watching players and seeing, putting the piece to the puzzle. And seeing how that goes. And you know, we have a really great staff that we put together. I can't really touch on the assistant coaches yet, but I think, you know, the CEBL as well as, you know, it'll be a treat for Canada on the whole and us continuing to develop the game. But, I, you know, most importantly, our first order of business was hiring a head coach and, you know, a guy that, you know, I know you covered the 905 as well, and we're all familiar with Charles Dubreuil. He was coaching. He was an assistant with Coach Jama last season with the 905 for the last couple of seasons. And, you know, the opportunity presented itself. And for me, it was a great opportunity to have him on board.
Yeah, and he seems like an absolute basketball lifer. I think he coached in like Japan for a long period. So the dedication that I would watch him in practice as well. And so he's definitely someone who's super dedicated to the game. And that's from my perspective, from what I've seen, that seems like a pretty awesome hire. And but from a talent evaluation perspective, I think what Raptors fans and Raptors 905 fans especially are most interested in, and someone you should have perhaps a unique insight into, is Nick Stauskas, who is joining the team because he's a five-year vet, and any team can sign in the G League after, if you're a five-year vet, you don't have to draft them. So Stauskas joins the 905 for this 15-game bubble. He went to Michigan. You went to Michigan. And I actually wanted to ask, I'm not sure if you listened to JJ Redick's podcast, but there's this Duke brotherhood that's incredibly pretentious and annoying to everybody else outside of Duke. I was wondering if it was sort of similar with Michigan in that regard.
Absolutely, Vic. It's funny. I was actually a couple guys that were, you know, a couple years ahead of me. Actually, Lewis Bullock, I'm not sure, he played some time or got drafted on, and then, you know, had a long career over in Europe. He actually connected with me this week, and we sat down. We had, you know, a podcast just like this. But the idea of it is really to keep that brotherhood going, and it's not even a podcast that's publicized or put out, you know, released to the public. But it's more for Michigan alumni, current players, former players, for us just to stay connected and stay together. So, you know, it was really a nostalgic moment and just really just liberating and fun to sit down and have those conversations. And then, you know, to go along with Nick, like, you know, follow up what you said there, like, yeah, like Nick and I would touch base now and then. And it's always like, okay, we have similar things to talk about, that as much as we're not together, as much as, you know, we're a couple years apart, we have similar experiences and, you know, some of the same places on Michigan campus we went to, the same jokes, you know, same experiences with John Beilein or fun that we poke at him. You know, it's a common ground for us. So it's always great to, you know, just have that brotherhood and have that experience and just be able to connect on that level, as well as just having so many mutual people here. And I think he's going to be an absolute treat for the Raptors 905 because, you know, if you're looking at his career, great. You know, he was drafted. He was a lottery pick, drafted 8. He was also the Big Ten Player of the Year, I believe, in 2013 it was, or his second. It was his sophomore
2014
year. 2014,
yeah.
So he was Big Ten Player of the Year there. You know, when you're looking at that, that doesn't happen by fluke. You know, those accomplishments don't happen just because, you know, somebody wanted to hand them over. I think where his career has gone, it's been situational, right? If you're looking at it, you're saying, okay, this lottery pick hasn't really established himself in this league. No, I think Nick, if he was drafted today, given, you know, where the NBA game is today, he would be a staple and he would be a guy that would be warranting a lot of money. So it's no surprise to me that he's going to be playing with the, you know, the Raptors development team, given the style of play the Raptors want to, you know, get up and down and lead the league in 3-point attempts and make. So I think he's going to come in and it's just to show that he's healthy and that he can still shoot the basketball at a high clip. And I'm pretty sure we'll see him bouncing, you know, back and forth this year.
And I'm hoping to ask him this myself at some point, but, you know, he spends 4 or 5 years in the league and then he's off to Europe for a year. He's out of the NBA. He's in Sacramento. Apparently not a great experience with DeMarcus Cousins. Goes to Philly. And he's in Cleveland. He's in Portland for a minute too. He had one amazing game. It was the opening night of the 2018 season, I think. I remember him hitting
LA, right?
Against LeBron. He hit a huge three. He was jumping into guys' arms. I was so happy for him at that moment. But, you know, so you're out of the league. Is there... And if you're in touch with him, I wonder if there's a moment like a crisis of confidence or something where he's like, I got to change my approach. I got to change something in order to stick. It is partially situational, like you said. But is there something that you know of that perhaps either he knows he has to change or you think he might have to change in order to actually get back into the league?
I think, you know, the NBA game is so, it's really particular in the sense of, it's made up of, you know, superstars, where you have your LeBrons, your Kevin Durants, your Steph Currys, you know, those spots are limited. You know, not everybody's going to be those guys. Then you have your specialty guys, you know, which I feel Nick would fall into that category right there, being, you know, a guy that can really shoot the basketball. Over his career in the NBA, he shot, you know, at a 35% clip from three. If he can get that number up, as well as get his attempts up and just make the right shots, make efficient shots, and be that knockdown guy when teams, you know, when defense collapses and he's the guy that you can kick out to and really rely on, there's always going to be a place for him. There's always going to be a place for shooters. And I think it's not so much that he needs to change anything. It's more confidence. It's more confidence. You're there. You're a lottery pick, and you were there for a reason, right? So I think this opportunity that had presented itself, him going to Europe, also allowed him time to decompress and just evaluate everything, because, you know, it was a tough stretch out there as well. And a lot, I see that with a lot in my time in Europe too, where a lot of guys that come from the NBA, you know, their first couple of months, they struggle a bit because it's a different culture of basketball. It's a different style, different philosophy. And the coaching is completely different. So the fact that he was able to merge those two, he's been, you know, at a high level playing in the Big Ten and at the NCAA, had a lot of success there, gotten to the NBA, you know, his second year with Philly was his best year. So he had a little turbulent start. He had some success with Philly, and things, you know, tailored off a bit. And then also, you know, injuries here and there, a natural part of the game. And then to the naive fan, you would think, okay, no, he went to Europe, he's done, he fell off. Well, no, a lot of guys really have a rebirth when they're able to go back and just, okay, now, you know, I can add some things to my game. I understand the game a bit different. I look at the game from a different perspective now. So I think it's gonna be bode well for him, and he has a tremendous opportunity in front of him, especially with an organization that really wants to shoot the three ball. And like we said earlier, a lot of this is situational, and this is a perfect situation for him.
And speaking of guys, they've looked to develop the three ball, and who's been surprisingly efficient from the three-point line is Chris Boucher. And he's someone who I watched his first game with the 905 and on, and I try to pretend to be that talent evaluator. And, you know, I see the freakish athleticism. I see the ability to block shots. I also see him jump at every up fake. That's even there for anyone who scouts him, can make him bite on any three-pointer. Why people continue to get blocked by their corner threes by Boucher is just beyond me, because he's just give him an up fake, it seems, and he runs by you. But, you know, after 2 years of watching him, a year and a bit watching him in the 905, I was thinking, okay, he gets the call up, he gets the guaranteed contract with the Raptors, but I just don't think he's going to stick. I don't see the jump shot doesn't seem reliable enough. It's this weird slingshot motion, and the game's too physical in the NBA for him. And I feel like if you gave Jamma some truth serum and asked him, did you think that this was going to be Chris Boucher? And who knows, you know, listen, he's got to prove it consistently over the course of a season, but I wonder if he would say that he really believed that this could be. Did you think that Chris Boucher could develop into what he is right now? And do you think this is actually what he is, like a 40%+ three-point shooter? Is this who he is? Like, tell me, what do you think?
Okay, I'll say this. You know, and I think that's the side that everybody looks at is what you don't get with Chris Boucher. And that was a focal point before. He's not as physical. He's, you know, well, for better words, he's pretty light for his position. You know, the mechanics of his shot may not be what everybody, you know, the perfect shot. It's not your Ray Allen shot. It's not some of your better shooters, or the mechanically of your better shooters. But, you know, what doesn't show up in the stat sheet is that he's a guy that fights. He's a guy that's gritty. He's a guy that's tough. He's a guy that, you know, is going to die for that loose ball. He's a guy that has an infectious, not personality, but energy for his team and his teammates, right? And I think that's what, you know, that's what earned him minutes with this Raptors team this year, in terms of, you know, he got this team extra possessions. He was the one, if you notice, you know, if there's ever a fast break, that basketball comes off the rim. For some reason, Chris Boucher always seems to be around the basketball, tipping it in. You know, that's a guy that is relentless in his approach to the game and doesn't take plays off. So, you know, at the start of the season or when he signed his contract, did he look like he was going to come in and, you know, be a 40% shooter or, you know, average double figures? No, but he earned his stripes. He earned his keeps with Coach Nurse over the time. And that allowed him along the leash to gain confidence in the things that he can do. So, and any coach will tell you, like, if you're able to give us, you know, if I look down my bench and I know I can get something out of you, and with Chris Boucher, it was going to be effort. It was going to be rebounds, and he was going to be able to defend multiple positions. He'll extend his minutes on the court. And then that gives him way to take one extra shot or two extra shots, which for him, he had the confidence to take those shots, which turns to 2, 3, 4 more. So I have commend him for that. And I hope as the season goes on, you know, guys will take more of his personality as well as Fred VanVleet's personality, which are guys that are just warriors and fight. So, and you know what? I'll say this too. It was a shortened off season. You would have thought that guys wouldn't be able to develop as much, but there was times where a lot of times I seen Chris in the gym in this little off season, and you would think that, you know, being guys would go home to their families or the respective province in his case, or wherever the home is for them. But he was in Toronto. He's proven to the coaches, just like I seen Stanley Johnson in Toronto over the off season, and those guys are here. And it's no surprise to me that those guys are the ones that are surprising us right now.
Yeah, and you place a particular value on the energy, on the effort. And there's a tweet that I read of yours yesterday that I'm sure would get most Raptors fans sort of thinking about things for a second. It was, as much as Raptors fans would love a superstar, I go as far as to say they're only missing that player that'll go set a good screen, secure loose balls, someone that enjoys the grunt work that leads to extra possessions and demoralizes opponents. And so when I have conversations with my friends, I think to myself, the Raptors need that superstar. That's the thought I have. You know, they trade for Kawhi, they win a championship, they lose Kawhi, they're gutting out a second round series. That's kind of the ceiling I see for them. So, you know, is there, like, I don't know.
Explain that a bit
further, because I do think that if you look on the history of the league, other than, you know, 2004 Detroit and like 2011 Mavs, even though they had Dirk, so they had that superstar, but otherwise it was a bunch of sort of role players. Do you think that their ceiling can be higher with a great role player? Like who would that be?
That's, you know, it's interesting because if you look at this team, right, of the, what are they right now? 7-11, I believe it is, correct?
Yeah.
If you look at the 11 games that they've lost, 7 of those have come down to essentially 2 possession games. That to me isn't a superstar. That is, you know, way before the superstar takes effect. That superstar gets that last shot. That comes down to a loose ball, an offensive rebound that could have been a putback, somebody missing their assignment offensively and setting a good screen. That would have given you just 3 of those right there would give you 6 baskets minimum, potentially 9, or even, you know, 4 3-point plays, 12. So those are little things that can be changed. Now, everybody in the perfect world, everybody would love to have a LeBron, would love to have a James Harden. The reality is there's not many of those in the NBA. Not every team, there's not 30 superstars. You have 6 superstars, you know, some stars, and again, now role players. And role players, which are either specialty guys or role players. So if we're playing our odds right now, what's the likelihood of us getting, you know, a guy that can do the grunt work and make a small change that can make a big difference is a lot higher than us, you know, attracting a superstar right now. And at the end of the day, if you secure a guy that can do some grunt work, we still have money left in the tank that we were saving for Giannis to go out and get that superstar next offseason. So I'm thinking more long-term. Right now, you know, this team is 2 games out of sixth spot in the East. Again, we're talking about, you know, a team that plays in the Eastern Conference where anything is possible. So, there's a lot of moving pieces. There's a lot of ways to look at it. And yeah, I would love to have LeBron here. I'd love to have Kawhi here. But then you also think, what does that do for your chemistry? What does that do with for the makeup of this team as well? So, yeah, there's many ways to look at it. That's just my immediate, I shouldn't say fix, but my immediate adjustment. And that, you know what, that could actually be done internally as well. If somebody is, you know, makes up their mind that they're going to be the Charles Oakley of this team and do those little things and hold guys accountable. So sometimes less is more. And, you know, it's a quick fix. If you're looking at the team last year as well, that was a team that came off a championship run, lost arguably the best player in the league at that time, and still end up finishing with the best record in franchise history. So a lot is doable without a superstar, so long as you have a team that plays together.
Yeah, and in that development mode, if we look at the current roster for the 905, they got a bunch of pretty enticing players with NBA experience. We mentioned Stauskas. There's Henry Ellenson, a sharpshooter who spent time with Brooklyn and in the 905 system last year.
I'm a big fan of his.
Okay. So yeah, because he got a little bit of preseason time against the Hornets. Just, you know, he missed a shot or two. And Nick Nurse did talk about just being disappointed that he couldn't see as much as of everybody. Mm-hmm. That he could. So, you know, for Raptor fans, what do you think his NBA potential is? Henry Ellenson, 6'10", out of Marquette, incredible shooter. What do you think he could possibly be if he ever were to come to the NBA?
I think he would be definitely a rotational big. The only qualm I have with him is, you know, his defensive ability. And again, if you're looking at the fours and the fives of the league right now, they're extremely agile. They're pretty much the makeup of Chris Boucher with size. So you have to be able to move. You have to be able to defend. You have to be able to laterally bring something to the table just as much on the rebounding end. So I think he's a big offensive talent. The only question I have, and I think that would be the only reason why he's been on the outside, hasn't really, you know, got his spot locked in or, you know, etched his spot in the NBA, would probably be the liability on that end would be my only concern there. But I think, again, within the right situation and with some development, the right coaching, he's an NBA talent as well.
And so someone who beat him out for an NBA roster spot that, I don't know if he came out of nowhere or not, but Yuta Watanabe. He's got similar height, like he's 6'9"-ish, but he's got length forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the stuff I read, I can't see it myself because I don't see the game in quite the detail that some of my colleagues do, like you. But everyone sort of says he's in the right spots all the time on both ends. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you see from Yuta Watanabe? Why did he beat out all those people that were in training camp? Like, what's special about his game that 905 and Raptors fans can really look forward to?
It boils down to, you know, that same thing with Chris Boucher. It boils down to effort and energy. And I think, you know, Watanabe did a great job in from the preseason on into up until this point in just his effort plays, and those pay dividends for him. I think when you're talking about positioning, he's always in the right position defensively. He doesn't miss many defensive assignments, and he really utilizes his strength, which is his length. I mean, if you're looking at him, you know what? He's not the best laterally. He chops his feet pretty fast, pretty high, and would look like he's about to tip over if you give him a right to left crossover. But you know, for some reason, he's always able to get a deflection. He's always to get, in the little minutes that he plays, a deflection, a block. He'll be out in transition. And a thing I appreciate about him, too, is a guy in his position will usually be a bit more, you know, anxious on offense and trying to get a bucket or trying to prove to the coach that, hey, I can score, too. Because, you know, naturally, young guys new to the NBA, you think, oh, I need to score to prove to the coach that I can play. Well, no, he's actually made some really good passes, the hockey pass at that, and not even looking for the assist. So when you factor all that in, he's a guy that that's earned his minutes as well. And then when you go back to the deflections, a deflection may not show up in the stat sheet as a steal or say, hey, this is the best defender. But what it does is disrupts the offense. And now when you've disrupted the offense, you've created an advantage for yourself defensively. And that's a big part of how he's earned his time, earned his stripes.
And in the vein of being in the right spots, and we're talking about work ethic, and I wanted to ask you and sort of switch gears a little bit to the international scene. If I could fire you up for a second, okay. Canada basketball gets fined $250,000 for not appearing at a tournament in Venezuela, I believe. Can you tell me your reaction when you saw that news?
I thought it was pathetic. I thought it was, uncalled for, given the climate of what we're dealing with and given that, Canada basketball was protecting the interests of their players, their staff, their coaches, and were advised by the health protocols of not only the team or the team doctors per se, but that of Canada, on a whole. I thought that was a bit unfair. When you take that into consideration and the fact that these sanctions were thrown down upon them while, both Canada Basketball and FIBA had been in conversation and corresponding in relation to, the upcoming windows in February. So, but I'm not surprised. There's stuff that goes on on the European side or where FIBA is concerned and, those stories probably won't be told too much. And I remember myself being on a trip with the national team. And I believe we were somewhere in South America and we're flying from, maybe Brazil to Argentina or something like that. It was a FIBA sanctioned tournament. And we had four teams going on this small jet in FIBA. This is all FIBA organized. And I remember at that time it was Thiago Splitter, Barbosa,
Berja,
a plethora of other guys, Berja, and these guys, some big guys were all 6'5" plus basketball players, and they're packing these four teams and the coaches and the support staff onto this flight. The luggage, all our luggage, is in the row in the middle of the rows of the flight. Luckily, right. So this is like FIBA saying, guys, board the flight. We're going on. And I remember the team doc, our team doc, actually, Dr. Philpott, said, no, Canada's not boarding this flight. And nobody is at that for that matter, if, these are going to be the conditions, because this flight won't get off the floor. And if it does, it's going to come down with everybody. So it's little things like that that doesn't surprise me when I see, a sanction like this from FIBA coming down after, the decision was made to protect their staff and players. So, but yeah, to touch on that flight, we actually never ended up boarding it. Eventually they sent some of the luggage they drove it to the next destination, which took a couple of days. That was a whole other story. And we barely got off the floor, and thank God we landed safely, but it was a mess. I think it was maybe two guys sitting in the rows actually on the floor of the row. It was a mess.
No, Javon, the next time I have you on, if you are kind enough to join me, it'll all be international basketball horror stories.
Done.
So stay tuned for that, everybody. But in my previous question,
maybe by then I'll have some of my salaries that have been owed to me for her.
Yeah, Leo Realms complains about that too. And I got sidetracked in my previous question because I was thinking about Steve Nash, who runs the Canadian national program. But I was wondering, you have a relationship with him. I was wondering when he became the head coach of the Nets, out of nowhere, it seemed anyway, no coaching experience, but someone who's obviously a proven leader, work ethic is legendary. Mm-hmm. But for me, I see him pacing the sidelines and I'm like, man, this is totally new for him. He doesn't draw plays. He's got his offensive and defensive coordinators. How do you think he's going to do, especially specifically in this situation where he's got to manage big egos? How do you think he's going to be able to sort of reel in this big three and have them playing optimally? Is Steve Nash the right fit for this team as head coach?
I say this. I think, again, when you're looking at, and I heard the conversations a while ago and people saying, you know, he's not qualified. Well, guess what? He's a two-time MVP in this league, and he's led, you know, he's been captain to some really good teams, really great teams, and been, you know, the floor general. So when I hear that he doesn't have the experience, I'm a little confused there, because in fact, he has more experience than, you know, some of the coaches that end up in that seat, because he's done it on the court, right? It's different to be, you know, on the sideline and dictating where guys should go. But when you're on the court doing it, and you're doing it in real time, you know those experiences, you can speak to those experiences, and you can also relate to your players more than, you know, a coach that's been removed from the game for 40 years. So, you know, just like anything, you know, a coach that has had, you know, sideline experience usually fills the voids in his staff where he's weak in terms of getting assistants that are relatable. Now it's just inverted. You know, this guy, he has the player experience. He's relatable. Now I fill those spots with coach that has, you know, chair experience. And so it's a little different. And I think he has the experience. It's just, we're not familiar with you know, we're just not familiar with him in that position. But in terms of experience, he has more than enough. And you don't accomplish some of the things that you do without, you know, having that experience. And then the second part to that was that these guys wanted him there, right? Like KD, if Sean Marks didn't get the green light from KD, Steve Nash is not there, right? So that speaks volumes too. And, you know, I have some friends that work with them at over in Brooklyn, and they speak highly of them. They speak highly of everything that they're doing. So it's great. And then, you know, Nash has brought in a guy like Amari that's easier. If anybody gets out of line, just get them in check. That's an enforcer.
Yeah, no, and he's someone, you know, in a new role that is very likely to succeed. You're someone in a new role who I think is also very likely to succeed. Both very thoughtful people that do everything with a purpose. Listen, Javon, you've taken a half hour out of your day. I really, really appreciate it. I wish you the best of luck with Ottawa, and we really hope that you can come back on and share some international horror stories and keep us up to date with the development of all the 905 players as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thanks, Javon. Have an awesome day.
Same to you.